You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Fred Goger, a former U.S. Marine. Fred, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning.
Fred, you have a very specific and interesting matter that you're dealing with, and I want to talk about that in detail in a moment. Before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you just give them a little bit of background about who Fred Goger is?
Yes, okay. I'm a former Marine. I joined the Marine Corps in 1964 in the summer after the first combat troops landed in July, Operation Starlight. After boot camp, that thing in the Dominican Republic, Santo Domingo, I went there, and that was a few months, and came back, and it was like a year after the first troops landed, and I said, I want to go to Vietnam, and I transferred to Vietnam. I was a field radio operator, push-to-talk man, and I ended up with 3rd Tank Battalion, about 7 miles out to Da Nang for a year, and then after that, I did a second year up north of Wei Fu Bai. And then after that, I went to Camp Lejeune and did a little tour with 10th Marines Artillery, 4 Deuce Mortars, and then my last 3 months where they sent all short-timers down to Guantanamo Bay. I was a radio chief for Echo Company, 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines. I did my 4 years and got out in July of 68. I met my wife right away, 3 days after I got home. Asked her to marry me 2 weeks later, and then woke up one morning, I had 5 kids. Okay, they don't tell you in the service when you get out, but at the time they didn't anyway. There wasn't a lot of literature or counseling on the VA, the Veterans Administration, how they could help you if you have any problems. They don't tell you that. I didn't find out till years later. Anyway, I lived in Jersey City, and I can remember putting dish towels and bath towels over the windows. I couldn't stand the feeling of people looking in and being able to see me, especially at night. If we had lights on in the house, I'd have to make sure the windows were closed or covered or blinds shut or something like that. And I couldn't sleep without a pistol near me. I still don't sleep without a handgun within hand's reach. I was locking the doors a couple of times, and I thought it was normal stuff. I thought it was just normal shit that I was overprotective and whatnot, and I didn't think anything of it. That went on. That was from 1970, all the way up to 2004 or 5. And with the Marine Corps League, I'm a shooter. I'm a firearms person. So I joined the Marine Corps League and the VFW, all them things, VVA, and I had access to an indoor pistol range in Old Bridge. I joined the club, and I was taking about a half a dozen of Marine Corps League members, older gentlemen who maybe had a pistol up in a closet that they never fired, that they wanted to fire. And we went every Monday we went and shot in what's called the Bullseye League at the Old Bridge Rifle and Pistol Club. And as I was driving there with a couple of fellows in my car, they were asking about me. I was fairly new, only a year in the league, and I didn't do much socializing with them except that little part of driving to the range. And they would ask me about what I did, where'd I go, and what I, you know, whatever, what was my job and stuff. And when I told them what was going on in my life, they said, you know, you should go and check with the VA. Go see a service officer and write up and tell them what's going on. I was waking up at night all the time, having nightmares and punching the wall. I hit my wife a couple of times waking up. It was a mental thing. I went to the VA and I told this guy all about it. It was a guy down in Asbury Park, Don McNamara. And he said, okay, we're going to put in a claim. We're going to put in a claim for PTSD and you're going to go get checked by the doctors. Well, when I went up to East Orange after the first physical, this was in 2006, and I went up for a physical at East Orange because they checked your eyes, your ears, your nose, and all that other stuff and whatever. And it turns out I had diabetes. I was diagnosed with diabetes. And if you were in Vietnam and you had diabetes when you got out, the VA looks at that at the time that you got that diabetes from exposure to Agent Orange. I didn't realize that because nobody ever said anything like that. So I had gone for 40 years, almost 40 years. And then finally the VA's, oh yeah, you're diabetic. So that was a automatic 60% rating. And then that was 2006. In 2008, I was elevated to 80% because I developed neuropathy, which is nerve damage in your feet and your hands. And then in 2009, I was elevated to 100%. The VA gives you ratings and compensation on those things. They don't add up your percentages. My percentages add up to 190%. Because I have nerve damage and tinnitus and left side, right side, neuropathy problems. So the 100% came from the PTSD. I have been going to group therapy since 2007 or 8 or something. It's all voluntary. I usually go down to Brick once every 2 weeks. And in those group sessions, I hear guys are talking about family problems, what's going on with their offspring. So I'm thinking, I should have talked to somebody about this stuff, because at the time, let me get it right here. My second son, who was born in 1979, Matthew, he had to get a spine operation, cut off a piece of his spine out of his tailbone. It had spina bifida. And I put in a claim for him with the VA. I talked to my service officer and said, what's the story on this? And it turns out that the VA only recognizes certain spina bifida cases on offspring of Vietnam veterans. And they said, okay, yeah, you don't get nothing. You got it. We're sorry. And that's it. Then my youngest son, Richard, who was born in 1983, when he was about 11, 1994, I forget what put him into Robert Wood Johnson Hospital, but it turns out he had a big tumor on his hip, and they had to take that out, and they put in a cadaver bone in his hip. I thought nothing of that, just okay, this kid, he had a problem. And then a couple of years later, he broke a collarbone. And then a couple of years after that, he broke his other collarbone. And he's a skinny kid. I just thought he, you know, was an unlucky kid. Started breaking bones and stuff. He joined the Air Force and got in with pins in his collarbone. His brothers had joined the Army before him. And in the Air Force, his nature is to do crazy stuff. So he got to be what was called a dirt boy, an engineer, driving heavy equipment. And they said, you want to be airborne, because the Red Horse Division of the Air Force is supposedly a unit that goes into a third world country. They jump in, make an airport, and then get out. So he said, yeah. So he went to airborne school. I went down to see him graduate in Fort Bragg. And then he went to air assault school. It was set up supposedly as a machine gunner in the helicopters that they would take to do their job. He did a year on the Afghan border, nothing to write home about. He came home, and to keep his jump status, he had to jump every once in a while. Well, on one of his jumps, he ended up busting his thigh, his hip, and misaligning his back, so that now he has a, they call it spinal stimulator, attached to a wire running up his back, and he has a little box he wears like a pager, and he'll press it if the pain gets too bad. One of his legs is slightly shorter than the other one, and he's limping. He'll be limping for quite a while. He's medically retired after about 8 years in the Air Force as a staff sergeant. And then after that, that was about 2007 or 8 or something. In 2010, he just got diagnosed with testicular cancer, and they cut off one of his testicles. He lives in Montana. He's married to an Air Force nurse. So he had a hip problem, a couple of collarbones breaking, a leg broke, and testicular cancer. Then my firstborn son, Joseph, was born in 72. He joined the Army, I think, around 91, 92, and he was with 10th Mountain Division. He'd never left the States. He did all his time in New York State, stayed in the reserves. He did his time and got out. And about a year ago, he lives down in Barnegat. He was feeling bad. He went and got checked up, and turns out he has colon cancer. And he had an operation last year. They cut out, I believe, I want to say 10 millimeters of his colon, or 10 centimeters. I'm not sure. I forget. But he's still undergoing chemotherapy and radiation. He'll be doing that until April. Of course, he's not working. He's out of a job. So I started thinking that the VA doesn't recognize any symptoms of offspring except a certain cancer. I took my oldest son to see a service officer with medical records and stuff, and he said they can't do anything for him. So my three sons had cancer problems that, according to the VA, have nothing to do with Vietnam. I just think it's a strong coincidence. And one of my daughters, Jennifer, who was born in 1980, she joined the Marine Corps. She was a health nut bodybuilder, and living in this house with her brothers and me and talking about hunting and stuff, she had macho stuff up to her ears, and I was very surprised. I told her one day, you want to get in shape, join the Marine Corps, they'll put you in shape. Right after 9/11, she went down to Red Bank and joined the Marines, came home, said, okay, they're coming to get me in a couple of weeks. She went down to Parris Island, and in her, I believe, 11th week on a run, she broke her hip just running. So she was in the hospital for a while, and they found a heart murmur. So they talked her into getting out, and she was diagnosed afterwards, a year later, as being bipolar. So again, it's just a strong coincidence that my kids are all suffering from something, but the VA doesn't actually recognize any of that stuff. I don't know if it does have anything to do with me, but all my sons, they make jokes and say it's all your fault. You know, they're blaming me on this stuff.
Right, and that was Joseph, Matthew, Richard, and Jennifer. What about your other girl?
My oldest daughter, Samantha, I haven't had any contact with her. She has kind of like disowned us about 5 years ago. She says it was my attitude in the house. My children, my Jennifer, Joseph, Matthew, they had to write up statements for the VA just to say what it was like living with me. And Samantha, she had left. Teenage daughters, you know, and fathers, no matter what, how they grow up and what rules you place on them, once boys come into play, all those rules go out the window. Samantha was a beautiful girl. She went to Barbizon. They were interested in her. I put her through that school. Never went anywhere. She was a tall girl, 6 foot as a high school senior, blonde hair, blue eyes. Beautiful girl. She was a basketball player. All my kids did something, but Samantha played basketball in a city league from when she was like 9 or 10, right on up to high school. And in her junior year at Middletown North, she was the starting center for the team when they went, I believe they went to state championships that year, playoffs. I mean, we went to Rutgers, met the Rutgers coach. She went to the clinic up there, but she met a boy, and that whole thing flew out the window. And during her relationship with the boy, she had given him money. My kids always had a job somewhere, at McDonald's or something. I said, if you get enough money to put a down payment on a little car, I'll take care of the insurance for you. She gave this kid money and gave her savings. I got really pissed at that, and I said, oh, we're not good enough here, and get out. I threw her out of the house for 2 days. I said, go live with him. She went to his house, and then I went and got her back. I kind of tracked her, followed her around if she went out. She didn't like that. So it turns out she has said to people, it's because the way the household and my father's attitude, I don't want to have anything to do with him. So it's been about 5 years. There's been no contact. She's married. I have 2 granddaughters there. So that's my 5th child, which unfortunately was my favorite. That's my firstborn daughter. But that's the story with Samantha. It's a shame.
Yeah, it happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
As far as Agent Orange, that's pretty well documented, and your ailments are common to people who are suffering from side effects of Agent Orange, like the neuropathy and the diabetes. But you said you were in Camp Lejeune also?
There's only 2 stateside real camps of the Marine Corps, Camp Pendleton and Camp Lejeune. And if you live east of the Rockies and you join a Marine, you're going to be stationed out of Camp Lejeune. I mean, that was my home base, I guess you'd call it. So I went to the Dominican Republic from Camp Lejeune. I went to Vietnam from Camp Lejeune. I went on a couple of cruises down the Caribbean with 10th Marines out of Camp Lejeune. And I went to Guantanamo Bay out of Camp Lejeune. The 4 years in the Marine Corps, though, I don't know if I stayed 4 weeks in Camp Lejeune. I was always coming or going.
Right.
But that was my home base there. As far as that water baloney goes, I wasn't there the discharge in 68 in the summer. So I wasn't there in the 70s, which is, I thought basically was the water problem.
Yeah, the problem actually went from 53 to 87.
Oh, okay.
What it is it centers around Marine Corps service members and their families living at the base, bathing in and drinking the tap water that was contaminated with these harmful chemicals. Yeah, last year, actually, not even a year, in August 2012, Obama signed an act into law to provide medical care for people who may have been affected by the contamination. Have you looked into that at all, Fred?
No.
Let's take a look at some of the, if they have it here, some of the ailments. See if that might be applicable to your boys. And the bill is called the Janie Ensminger Act in honor of Jerry Ensminger and his daughter Janie, who died of cancer at age 9. And the bill applies to 15 specific ailments believed to be linked to the contamination, including cancer of the esophagus, lung, breast, bladder, or kidney, leukemia, multiple myeloma, myelodysplastic syndromes, I don't know what they are, renal toxicity, hepatic steatosis, don't know what that is, female infertility, miscarriage, scleroderma, don't know what that is, and or neurobehavioral effects of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The Department of Veterans Affairs is assigned by the bill to provide the medical care, says to fund the medical care. The bill extends higher fees for VA home loan guarantees to October 1st, 2017. Any of those ailments?
No, it doesn't sound familiar to any of my kids.
You first started with Matthew. What's his prognosis?
He has no further problem with his spine, so he suffers from, I forget the term, but it's like water on the brain, hydrocephalus maybe, where he was suffering from migraines years ago, but that seemed to stop. He's asthmatic, but I don't think that has anything to do with it. Matthew joined the Army about 1997. He didn't want to go into reserves. He wanted to do a 3-year contract. So he took a police job, a prison guard, corrections officer.
Right.
He went to Fort Leavenworth and did 3 years in that prison as a correction officer. He had no medical problems other than being an asthmatic. He was fine. And he had some migraine problems, but he still did his 3 years and got out. I haven't heard anything medically wrong with him now, lately. He's out in Montana also. He went to guide school in Idaho, which didn't pan out, and now he's going to school for welding. He's out in Hamilton, Montana.
So he's doing okay then?
Not really. He's unemployed. He was a policeman for a year in Miles City, Montana. But just before he came time for him to join the union, he got through his apprenticeship. They had job cuts in the city, and him and two newer officers got laid off. So he went back across the state. Montana is a very long state. He went back across the state to be near his brother, who lives in Great Falls, Richie. He kind of based himself in Hamilton and was looking for a job, and that's what he's doing. And through the VA, he's going to school to learn welding. They say that's a 2-year school. I don't understand it. I don't know what the heck you learn in 2 years of welding school, but that's what he's doing. He's just waiting. I've been supporting him. He lives on a ranch, and he pays $450 a month rent, but I'm doing that for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets a grant from the VA to go to school. Like, we would have food stamps here. He gets a card from the state of Montana for $300 for grocery items. So he's going to school, and he's been out looking for a job, as is my daughter Jennifer here. She's going to MRI technician school, and she's back in the house living with me, and she goes out to Piscataway every day to be an MRI technician, which is another year of school for her.
Right. Matthew, health-wise, how is he doing?
Yeah, he's okay. I got to say he's okay. He's 33 years old or 34 years old. He's okay. His mental state isn't as well because he feels bad that he's got to ask me for money. But as of this point, he's getting a school grant and his grocery thing. He's okay. I don't have to really give him anything for a few months now.
Okay, and what about Richard? How is he doing health-wise?
Rich is limping, okay, and mentally he's angry. He's medically retired from the Air Force as a staff sergeant. His wife got out of the Air Force. She is also medically retired because of asthma. So that both of them are staff sergeants on retirement pay, and she's also got a job in the hospital in Great Falls. I don't know at what level she is as a nurse, but they're doing okay. They have two children. My wife is out there now. She went February 1st, and she's gone until August 2nd or something. 6 months. I'm a bachelor.
Mm.
Now I have a new grandson out there, born in July. And their first child, Gabriella, turned 5 in July. When Richie got hurt on his jump, when he busted up his leg and had to go in the hospital for a while, it's kind of a blessing in a way because he didn't go when his unit went to Iraq. He stayed home. He felt bad about that. But after he recovered a few months and whatnot, they got pregnant and had Gabriella, which was a blessing.
Sure.
So he didn't go to Iraq and ended up having a daughter. Then, when he got testicular cancer there, 2010, they took one of his testicles. He panicked, and they didn't know what to do because they really wanted more children. So there was a lot of stress there. When she got pregnant again, it was a big surprise. So my wife was at both births because my daughter-in-law lost her mother at childbirth, so she had no mother, and she's from California, had no family. So my wife is actually taking up the role as being her mother. So she's been out there. He was out there when I found out Richie got hurt on his jump, and my daughter-in-law, Jennifer, who's also Jennifer, he called and said, Richie got really hurt. He's been in the hospital, broke his leg, and broke his hip. I put Shirley on a plane, my wife, the next day, and she was out there as moral support for Jennifer and in the hospital with Richie. And also, again, when he had the testicular operation, cancer operation, she went out there because he was going through terrible chemo and radiation treatments where he was sick all the time. And Jennifer was still in the Air Force and had to go to work every day. So my wife was out there with Richie, like doing a bedside nursing and helping him do stuff because he was really sick for quite a while. And then again, when Jacob was born, my new grandson, she was out there for that birth and was there in July for, I don't know, about a month. She's out there now because Jennifer has got to go this week, I believe, down to Atlanta, Georgia for 2 weeks for training. And Shirley's going to help Richie with the two kids because Gabriella is in daycare and she enjoys it, so they want to keep her going to school. So Richie will take her to school and my wife will be with the baby. And that's going to be for 2 weeks. And then in June, my son Richie, who is also a shooter, he's going to go and shoot in the Matthew Quigley Buffalo Rifle match at the other end of the state for a week. It's a week on the rifle range. Actually, he bought me a Sharps 45 120 black powder rifle and really got into it. We make our own ammunition and all that stuff. So he bought me this big-ass rifle. It's a $4,200 rifle. He had it made by Sharps up in Montana. And he took that last year to the match where they shoot at targets all the way out to 1,400 yards. And the firing line's about a mile long. You camp out there for a week. He has a trailer, and he's going to do it again in June. So he'll be gone for a week, and Shirley will be there when Jennifer goes to work, and she can watch the two kids.
You got it all figured out, huh?
July comes around, and it's the two birthdays. So she'll be there for the two birthdays. And also, Matthew lives about 2 hours away down in Hamilton, Montana. So he'll get a chance to see her a couple of times. So I figured instead of buying 3 airplane tickets, I'll buy one and stay the hell out there. So
Richard and Jennifer are both retired staff sergeants from the military. So they get a nice pension, right?
Yeah.
But they have medical issues still.
Yes.
And how about their kids? Anything transferred to your grandkids? Hopefully not.
Not yet. One is only going to be 5 in July, and the other one's going to be 1 in July. So nothing yet. I mean, my 5-year-old granddaughter, she's a little skinny kid, but she's beautiful. You know, she's a little skinny girl, but she's feminine. And she's like her father. We used to call him Stick Boy. He was always very thin. Young boy, Jacob, looks like he's going to end up being like me, a big kid. He looks like he can play middle linebacker for the Giants now. He's only 1 year old. We're waiting to see. Thank God, so far, no problems.
And how about Joseph? Medically, how is he doing now?
Like I say, he's in chemotherapy right through to April. He's been doing it for a few months already. And the doctors say that because he is a strong, otherwise healthy person, they can give him heavy doses and stuff. But he still gets sick. He sent me a text this morning that yesterday was one of the worst days after chemo, that he feels very sick, running a fever and whatnot.
Damn.
So until that's over, he's having a rough time. He's basically angry at having to go through this stuff. And I'm sure in the back of his head, he's blaming me, just like his brothers. That's got to be your fault.
Yeah, what about blaming the government?
All my sons blame the government for something. First of all, we are all firearms people. So all the anti-gun stuff that's coming, and Obama's wanting to disarm the country, can't talk to my sons about that. They go off the wall. But medically, no, they don't blame the government. And I don't know if I could blame the government. I asked to go to Vietnam. Okay, I asked to join the Marine Corps, and I asked to stay in Vietnam. I didn't know anything about Vietnam. When I came home from the Dominican Republic, I just knew that combat troops were already in Vietnam. I knew it was over there on the other side of the world somewhere, but I went right over to operations, and I said, I want to transfer, send me over there. I would have gone and done the same thing in Chicago. I didn't join the Marine Corps to travel or money for school or any of that shit. Anybody who joins the Marine Corps, they join it for trigger time. And when I went to the Dominican Republic and somebody shot at me for the first time, I was hooked. I had never touched a firearm before I joined the Marine Corps. They taught me how to shoot. They taught me respect for the firearms. When I went to Vietnam, it was the best hunting trip I could ever go on. I mean, they give you clothes, they give you food, they give you the weapons, and they pay you. I mean, I asked to go and I asked to stay there. And the only reason I didn't stay for a third tour is because I was an E-5. I went there as an E-1, and in 2 years, I was an E-5, and they wouldn't let me outside the wire anymore. So I didn't get to go on any operations or something. I was with a tank outfit, 3rd Tank Battalion. They used tanks as a blocking force. We'd go in the field, and communications people would go and be in the field for 2-3 weeks at a time, living in a hole. Infantry would sweep an area, and the tanks would be there as a blocking force or to catch them. We did a lot of our own security around our camp. So as a radio operator, I got to do a lot of that. Like I say, to me, I had no political aspirations and no reason. I didn't know anybody. Of course, we all said, man, I miss having pizza and I miss having ice cream and I miss having a nice fucking peat to live on and shit and a pillow. But I never met anybody who was disgruntled about being in Vietnam. But that was the early days. That was the first 3 or 4 years that we were in there. Yeah, there were some bad remarks in the news from back home, but it didn't really didn't bother me at all. Okay, people don't like the idea we're bombing people, okay. But like I say, I asked to go and I asked to stay there, and I have no regrets about doing that. I don't really blame the government. I might blame myself being young and stupid, but that's about it. I don't blame the government.
Fred Goger, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. Fascinating story, and I hope that Joseph, Matthew, Richard, Jennifer, and Jennifer and Samantha and the grandkids. And Shirley, did I get everybody?
I think so. I never mentioned my daughter's son, Zachary, my oldest grand. He's 22. He joined the Marine Corps right out of high school and went to my old outfit, Echo Company 2-8. And during Paris Island training, he broke his ankle, broke his foot, and he had to go into the hospital. And then after, they usually keep you, I say, 6 weeks and you'll be back. Well, he was in there 2 months, and they told him as he was healing up and limping on crutches and stuff, he was there too long and he's going to have to go home. He told his father, who told me, it's on a Sunday night. I got the call about 9 o'clock. Me and Shirley were watching television, and he gave me the phone. He told me that, and I said, "Bullshit." I said, "The Marine Corps doesn't send you home because you broke something. The only way you get off Paris Island is because you want to get off Paris Island. You have to want to go, unless, of course, you kill somebody and you go to jail. At the time, you were gay and they caught you. They don't want that. So basically, you don't get sent home because you broke something." So I told my wife, "Go upstairs, take a shower. I'll take mine after you." So she went upstairs. I threw some underwear in a bag and stuff, jumped in my truck and took off to Parrot Island. I stopped at Andrews Air Force Base. I stayed there for a night. I stopped at, I think it was Fort Bragg in North Carolina. Stayed there for a night, and then I went to Parrot Island, and I was there for 3 or 4 days. I parked outside the hospital barracks trying to get a glimpse of them, and I didn't see them. So I went to the parade grounds. There was troops practicing for graduation. It was like a Wednesday, because I got there on a Sunday night. This was like a Wednesday morning, and I'm sitting in the grandstand. It's like a big parade deck. The big grandstand is like a baseball stadium. And I had on my red satin Marine Corps jacket and a 3rd Division baseball cap. And I had some rockers on my arms that say, you know, just campaign stuff. And I'm in the middle of the seats, and a gentleman walked in camouflage utilities with a drill instructor hat on. And everybody was shaking his hand and saying good morning to him. Even the officers sitting down in the front were all shaking this guy's hand. So I'm thinking he's either a first sergeant of the whole base, or he's a well-decorated person coming out of combat or something, because they're all making sure that they say good morning to him. And he looks up at me. I'm about 15 rows up, and he bypasses everybody, comes walking up the stairs right to my row, and I'm the only one sitting in this row. And he comes over and says, "Do you mind if I sit?" I said, "No, Top, sit down," because he recognized my 3rd Division hat, because he was in the 3rd Division. And he said, "Who were you with in the 3rd? And I said, "I was a radio operator for tanks." So we got to talking about old Corps, new Corps stuff, because he was, I'm guessing he was in his mid to late 50s, and he was an E-9 master gunnery sergeant, I think they call it. And he said, "What are you here? You got somebody graduating?" I said, "No, my grandson is in medical. He's supposed to graduate such and such date." And he says to me, "Oh, it's one of my boys." Turns out he was the 1st Battalion 1st Sergeant at the time. And he was also a decorated hero from Vietnam and what. So I said, "Yeah, he's up there." And they told me how to go home, but you and I both know they don't throw you off of here. And he said, "You know what? He's not supposed to have any visitors. I was over there trying to catch a glimpse of him." He says, "I'll tell you what. You go over there, go up to the 2nd floor, go in and see Staff Sergeant Masters is in there. Tell him you want to see your grandson." I said, "Okay." So I take my truck over there. I walk into the barracks, and I'm going by all these kids that got casts on their foot outside. They're walking in crutches, and they're all saying, "Good morning, sir. Good morning, sir." And I go up, and I knock on his door, and I go walk in his little office, and there's like 3 guys in shorts and T-shirts, like running suits, that are the drill instructors in there. And they all stop what they're doing, and one guy looking at me, and I went right up to his desk, and I said, "I know you got him here. I want to see my grandson. He's got an ankle injury, and I want him for 60 seconds, and you can have him back." So he says, "What's his name?" And I said, "Goger." So he goes on the phone. He goes on a computer, finds out where he's located, he goes on the phone, he says, "Come with me." We go outside back into the barracks area and go into the barracks, and all these kids are in there with problems, arms and feet and legs and stuff, and they're all scurrying around. They fix their beds or something, and the DI yells out, "Where's Goger?" And somebody comes, he went by the barbershop. So the guy said, "Go get him." And he takes me back inside, says, "Sit down. Stay right here. Your grandson will be here in a couple of minutes." So I'm sitting outside the office on a little bench, and all of a sudden, a few minutes goes by, and my grandson walks around the corner. He's in sneakers, and he's limping, and he had no idea I was coming. And he comes up to me. Now, he's as tall as I am, so I'm looking dead in his eye. I went right up to him, about 6 inches from his face, and I said, I'm poking him in the chest. I said, "I limped off this fucking island with a dislocated knee, and I had sling palsy, which was a problem. Guys had nerve problem if they used a sling on an M14 rifle too tight. But 3 weeks on the rifle range, you lose the use of your arm." Wow. And I had that for 6 months in the Marine Corps. I couldn't use my left hand. Plus, I had a dislocated knee from the obstacle course. And when I went to talk to DI about it, he hit me, boom, and told me, "If you go to the hospital, you're going to be 6 weeks. You're going to graduate with another platoon." So I didn't go to the hospital. So I had a... I worked the last week or something with a dislocated knee and sling palsy. I'm poking my grandson. I said, "I limped off this fucking island with a dislocated knee and sling palsy. Don't give me no shit about you. You fucking get that ankle fixed, and if you don't graduate, I'm going to shoot you in the fucking foot." I said, "Now get back in there."
What happened?
He's got tears in his eyes. He didn't want to cry in front of me. When he turned around and said, okay, and he went back in the office. And I later learned when he graduated, we went down for graduation, that the guy in the office said, who was he? He says, that's my grandpa.
That's a great story.
I'm all the way fucking down there. I was away for a week. I didn't call my wife till I hit North Carolina and said, I'm okay. I'm going after Zach. And that was it.
You even said to him, I just need 60 seconds with him. Is that all it took?
It took me 30 seconds.
Wow.
30 seconds.
He graduated.
Yes, he went back, and his therapy was in a gym, and his old drill instructor for the platoon he was in came in to see him and said, hey, I hope you're doing okay, because I want you back. See, after they graduate a series, those drill instructors pick up new guys. So his original platoon had graduated, and his drill instructor picked up a new platoon, and he came to see Zach and said, I want you in my platoon. So he did, and he graduated the following January, and I took the whole family down there, me and Shirley, Joe, Matthew, Ricky, Jennifer. We all went down to Paris Island for about 4 days.
What about Zachary now?
Now, he is back living with his father now. He's got his truck driving license. He had a job. He was working out in the west around Wyoming, but he's back now, and he's with his father. He takes him to chemo and whatnot, and he's planning on going back to Wyoming driving a truck. I think he has aspirations towards the oil pipeline from Alaska and working somewhere in there. There's no medical problems, as far as I know, with him.
That's good. Fred, again, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining this to the listeners. Very interesting stuff. Thank you for serving your country, no matter how trite or cliche that sounds or how controversial it might sound to a lot of people. But this is history. This is the past. You answered the call. You did serve your country for better or for worse. And thank you for doing that. And thank you for taking the time explaining all this.
Okay, you're welcome.